AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we're off to Scribbly Gum Island with Theresa Palmer in BBC One's adaptation of Leanne Moriarty's The Last Anniversary. Dipping across to Wales to solve crimes with Timothy Spall in Death Valley, also on BBC One, and crashing Julianne Moore's party with Megan Fahey in Sirens on Netflix. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. We are not, I'm sorry to say, recording on Scribbly Gum Island, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to get a great deal of enjoyment this week from talking about Scribbly Gum Island, possibly the most Australian-sounding place ever devised. And of course, joining me on my Aussie adventure, my trip to Scribbly Gum Island, are my two co-pilots, our very own Jim Robinson, Bonza Boyd Hilton. And our very own Mrs. Mangle, it's Ripper Ribeiro.
James,
see,
no.
See, you laughed. You laughed preemptively. Well, you laughed preemptively and you should have seen it coming.
I thought you were going to say Super Jane. You know, like, I thought I'd be Jane at least, but okay, fine.
Plain Jane Superbrain.
Yeah.
No, you're
Mrs. Mangle.
You're Mrs. Mangle.
All right, well, I'll take that.
I consider myself the bouncer in this equation, so it's all fine.
Now, you're Toadfish.
Who's Toadfish?
Well, look him up.
Okay, fair enough.
I thought you were a Neighbours super fan. I thought you knew Toadfish.
Oh, from that era. I don't remember Toadfish being in that era. Who the hell is Toadfish?
I didn't even watch it. I remember Toadfish.
I've never heard of it. Don't know what that is.
Put it on your sofa list.
I thought we could talk a little bit about Neighbours because I'm just trying to distract Boyd from obviously the existential angst that he must be going through at the moment after Tottenham Hotspur's ascendancy. Wow. And I say this as someone who neither knows nor cares in the slightest about football.
How did you find out about that?
I mean, Joe Barton has been tweeting fairly relentlessly.
Joe Barton, he has, that's true.
So, yes.
Hilarious memes.
And, the great convergence occurred and your bitter rivals have
Well,
triumphed.
Okay, I was going to save it for the question section, but let me just ask you a few questions.
Okay.
Boyd, what are your favourite TV shows set in or around the Basque Country? The listener also wants to know what your favourite series that feature a triumphant Australian and what are the best trophy lifting scenes in television history? those questions might have come from your personal friend and football fan nemesis.
Yeah, what I would say is now I'm very pleased for Spurs and all the fans finally having won something after 17 years without winning anything. I'm also very pleased for them. They've won the competition that is made up of clubs called things like Jugwarel and Bong Bong.
Are you going
and
full Farage here?
Scribbly Gum.
Scribbly Gum!
I think they played Scribbly Gum in round four. it's a nonsense competition.
Would it be a nonsense competition if you won?
It would be, put it this way, it's a more important season, it's a better season that we've had coming second in the league for the third year running and getting to the semi-final of the actual European Champions League, which is the actual trophy that makes you champions of Europe. Unbelievably, Spurs fans, I think including Joe, certainly have calling themselves champions of Europe. They're champions of the second level of mediocrity of Europe.
Do you know what, right? When I got this email from Joe Barton,
They've lost it.
It was very amusing, but instantly I thought the thing is he's making a rod for our back because we have to then deal with Boyd's
We now
rant.
Have to listen to
I'm explaining the reality of the situation.
If we had live listening figures for this podcast, I'd be watching them plummet during the last 3 minutes.
I think your phone football is very popular.
Is it? Is it though?
The bottom line is you're handling it well.
Yeah, you are. You're saying well.
I could not give a shit. But the entertaining thing is watching how incredibly excited Spurs fans are. They're having an open-top bus parade for this cup. No one gives a shit about, apart from the actual winner of the cup, obviously. So, yeah.
I think had it not been for the quote-unquote drubbing, it wouldn't be so sensitive.
They weren't playing us, by the way. They were playing Man United. It was the 16th versus 17th in the league match. It is embarrassing. embarrassing. It's also technically, officially,
I'm so sorry, Joe.
One more thing. It's officially the worst European final in history in terms of like.
To be fair, Sophie Petzl was tweeting, it's astonishing. Yeah. Something to do with winning a cup when no one was on target. I don't really know what that means outside the context of Star Wars.
Spurs literally did not have any attempt at goal in the entire second half.
But there was a goal scored. I can't believe we're still discussing this.
It's incredibly scrappy and terrible goal.
I'm so sorry, all listeners to this podcast.
I have tweeted out a brilliant article from the Her Majesty's Telegraph, which talks about how, despite this victory for Spurs, which did occur last night, they still haven't had as good a season as Arsenal.
Oh my God.
Or if you want to see my full views, just check that out. I've tweeted it today.
I'm so sorry. I thought it would be funny. I misjudged the situation horribly. I can only apologise to everyone listening.
And once again, thanks, Joe, for riling him up.
Oh, God. Now, and I cannot emphasise this enough, other than the fucking football, what have you been watching, Boyd?
Other than the football, I've finished Little Disasters, which we reviewed on the...
we did.
Other podcast.
On Pilot Plus,
on the highly acclaimed by in the village, in the town hall. We had a town hall this morning, James, which clearly you didn't listen to, for our company. And it was mentioned, the triumph of the subscription-only Pilot TV podcast, Pilot, what do we call it? Pilot Plus.
Oh, my God. Wow. What's happening to you?
The triumphant podcast that not even the co-host knows the name of.
Pilot Plus. So, yeah, that triumph, we reviewed it on there, Little Disasters, which is Paramount Plus's six-part psychological thriller slash whodunit slash lots of things. I got through three. I got through the first half of the series when we reviewed it properly, and we were guessing you and I what the conclusion was. Obviously, we can't talk about that because it was spoiled.
No,
because Kay had seen the whole thing and knew what the conclusion was. I've now watched the whole thing, including the conclusion.
So I got Boyd after we recorded yesterday to tell me what his what his suspicion was, and were you right or wrong?
Well, I was a bit right, wasn't I?
A little bit right.
Yeah. Without giving anything away, I was a little bit right. What about him? Was James? Was James right?
Well, no, we said the same thing.
I didn't realise that. Okay. So, yeah, we were both
a bit right.
What I would say about the...
And mostly wrong.
What I would say about the ending is, it's kind of unguessable in a way, isn't it? Like, that's the clever thing about it. It's difficult to guess the actual thing that happened.
Yeah.
And again, it keeps... I don't know if this is just me or whether, writers of books... All of these things were adapted from the novel.
By Sarah Vaughan.
Sarah Vaughan, who wrote the Anatomy of a Scandal, which was a brilliant romp. It was on Netflix a couple of years ago. But this was obviously slightly more intense, shall we say, because of the subject matter, inevitably. But it was still great fun, loads and loads of fun, even though it dealt with quite big, serious issues, mental health, etc. But the ending did feel like a Harlan Coben ending to me. Like the way he kind of starts with an event, if you like, and then spins back and like constructs an incredibly complex and densely layered kind of series of incidents and flashbacks and etc. And you finally arrive at the end and you're like, oh, there's something very satisfying about the way he concludes his books. In fact, I just saw today that he's plugging his latest novel, which is written with Reese Witherspoon. And he says...
He's written a novel with Reese Witherspoon,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, amazing.
Why, though?
Well, I mean, presumably Reese Witherspoon said, hey, do you want to write, can I write a novel with you? Because she's a huge fan of his work. And he went, well, I mean, you wouldn't say no, would you? No one says no to Reese. She's the queen of the, you know, literary adaptation, of course. So, fair enough. But he said, readers are going to, will not believe what they read in the final page of this novel. And I thought, that's a good ad. That's a good promo. Because now I really want to know what happens on the final page. Anyway, I was very impressed.
You should do what my mum does, which I've only just discovered, which is that she...
No,
I don't do it. I'm not a maniac. It's my mum, who doesn't listen to the podcast. So that's why I can say
maniac?
That. Yeah, only because I know she doesn't listen to it.
She reads the last page of the book first.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Deranged.
No, it's crazy. It's because if it's too sad, she doesn't want to read it. So, yeah.
Wow. So, if she reads the last page and it seems quite sad, she'll just abandon the book.
Yeah. Which
That is incredible. Mm. So anyway, I absolutely
so much makes sense now.
I really, really liked the Disasters. Yeah, steady. That's true.
Yeah. Listen, you want to tread very carefully. Yeah. Yellow card.
As I was saying, I really liked Little Disasters. I thought it was fantastic. Little Disasters, big triumph, I'd say.
I see what you did there.
Put that on the poster.
Then what else have I been watching? I've watched the weekly Doctor Who slot, which is we're nearly coming to the end. This is the penultimate. It's actually the first part went out on Saturday of the 2-part finale. So the finale is in, and the first part went out and was brilliant. I said this to Russell D. Davis in the interview that we did with him. Fine. I did with him for this podcast. How I love the fact that he writes the descriptions of the episodes, and they're quite kind of like logical and clear, and they explain what the premise is of each week's story, which is obviously the whole point of them. But he completely sets up a whole new thing when you actually watch the show that barely bears any relation to what he said in the actual official synopsis. And sure enough, this first part of this season finale is whack. It's so weird and bizarre. He kind of starts it in the middle of this crazy world that you have no idea. I think it's almost like a kind of upside down world. What's the Superman phrase for the upside down world? You know what I'm talking about?
What, the thing you mentioned?
The bizarro. Oh, bizarro world. It's like a bizarro version of the world. And he's brought back the Rani. That happened at the end of the Eurovision episode, who's now played by Archie Panjabi, who does a brilliant job. Kate O'Mara played this character in 1985. The legend Kate O'Mara ended up playing in, I think she was in Dynasty with Joan Collins. She was Joan Collins' sister, I'm pretty sure. And she's bi-generated the Rani. This is like a famous old enemy of the Doctor, who's also a Time Lord or Time Lady. She's in fact the last Time Lady, it turns out. And Anita Dobson's character, Mrs. Flood, and her are kind of, but they're like two parts of the same being, if you like. In the same way I did this with David Tennant and Shuti Gatwa in his regeneration, he bi-generated. And in this Abdurrahman is bi-generated as well. So it ends up with this huge big coalition of evil against the Doctor. And it's fabulous. It's brilliant. And now I cannot wait to see the actual finale, which is feature length. I think it's like 70, 75 minutes long, and it's going to be shown in cinemas across the UK and Ireland simultaneously, and as well as on TV. Anyway, so that's Doctor Who. And finally, you remember I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that we didn't cover because I hadn't really heard about it. It's on Amazon Prime, the show called Overcompensating, which is about a young gay guy who arrives at university and he's a jock, and he's, you know, back in his high school days, he was like in the football team and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And now he's like thinking about his sexuality and what to do about it now that he's arriving on college campus. Mm. I watched it. It's on Amazon Prime. It's on Prime Video. It's really, really funny. It's a bit like Heartstopper, but much more silly in terms of James's mm-hmm. humour point of view, and also much more raunchy as well. It's kind of like, it's quite full on, but I thought it was really, really funny. It's kind of ramshackle, and the guy who created it they found him on YouTube, and they found him online basically. It's called Benito Skinner, and he's known as Benny Drama online, and he created the whole thing loosely based on his own experiences. He's 31 now, and so he is playing like an 18-year-old, 17-year-old, and every now and then you're like, oh, there's a lot of makeup and lighting. He's doing a lot of work to try and make him look 10, 11, 12 years younger. But once you get over that, he's really funny in himself. And there's this character called Hayley, who is the roommate of his kind of like best friend, who becomes his best friend, Carmen. And she is played by a actress called Holmes. She's just one word. She's a mono, you know, like Prince or Madonna. She's just called Holmes. And this she is hilarious. She's like this very massively popular mean girl type, but less kind of vicious and just more silly and kind of deranged character. And she speaks at 100 miles an hour. She speaks so quickly, I kept having to like pause the dialogue. And in the end, I thought, oh no, I'll just put the subtitles on, and the subtitles really help. I could not understand half really? Of what she was saying, but it's part of her whole character. So you just, and I think they boldly went with the fact that she speaks so quickly, you can't really make out half of what she's saying, and most of it is really funny because of the fact that all the kids watch stuff with subtitles on now. So they must have thought, oh, it's fine because you can just read the subtitles. But she is absolutely hilarious. She's like she steals the whole show. Holmes as Hayley, watch out for it. But yeah, that's all on Prime Video right now. Overcompensating, give it a go. That's what I've been watching.
Okay,
I sense James was kind of nodding off there a little bit.
I had stopped listening a while back, but it's fine. It's all good.
I knew he had as well because he was just staring at the wall.
He was weirdly more interested in the football chat.
He came alive then.
Yeah,
I think unfortunately, buddy, you have there's a finite amount of my attention you have each podcast, and unfortunately, blew it all at the top of the show. So
yeah, God, wow, what a comment.
It's encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, what observation. Yeah, whereas I'm riveted by every single word.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah. Well, hold that thought while you listen to me now. So, are either of you watching The Piano?
Oh, with Claudia?
Yeah.
No,
I know you're not actually asking me that question.
No, I was directing it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I just thought you'd zoned out again. It is so good. I love it. Mm. And so when this episode of the pod goes out, the finale would have been on yesterday. And honestly, it's just so joyful and heartwarming and emotional. And they've got a new judge on, John Baptiste, who I'm now sort of semi-obsessed with. He's wildly charismatic and fun. And he's a great double act with Mika. And obviously, Claudia's on top form as well. But I just honestly, I don't even care who wins, or who's selected at the end of the finale, of the final, because it's so brilliant to see how healing music is and how it gets people through tough times, how it's an expression of love. It's so moving. I highly recommend it. If you need some joy in your life, you can catch up on what I call 4OD.
Channel4.com.
But, fine, whatever.
Yeah. It's the final, this weekend or next weekend, isn't it? I think this weekend.
Yeah.
Did you say that?
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Great listening skills.
No.
I've also been watching the first episode of And Just Like That, Series 3, which is on Sky Comedy. I'm gagged, can't say anything about it, but I urge everyone, well, mainly Boyd.
You're gagged.
I can't say anything about it because it's embargoed, but Boyd, please watch the first episode because I need to discuss it with someone.
Oh, okay.
And anyone who, I think it hasn't gone down very well, has it? The first two series, at least I wasn't into it particularly. I mean, I sort of at some stage just started hate watching it because the storylines didn't feel very authentic to the lead characters and it just felt a bit box ticky.
Oh, it was definitely box ticky. I think it got better. I think the reception of it got better after season one.
Mm.
And season two, I think, was better received.
It was better, but I'm not saying.
Yeah, the people have issues with various elements of it, but I got the sense that by the end of season two, a lot of people quite liked it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A lot of human beings, a lot of fans of the original, and characters.
I'd be interested to see what you think of the first episode. There's one particular point which I would like to discuss. And I have also started watching the first two episodes of The Gold, which I hosted the screening for. That's the drama by Neil Forsyth, and it's about the Brinksmack gold heist. Series one dealt with the robbery itself and the immediate aftermath. And then the second series follows the second half of The Gold and its disposal.
You can't say what you think.
I know, I'm not.
We will almost certainly end up reviewing it.
Okay? Yeah. I'm just literally telling you what I've watched.
Very, very podcast.
Yeah. And that's it. James, can you just go through the three shows that I talked about?
Oh,
Gold, The Piano, and another show.
To be fair, you did better than I thought.
Two out of three, that's a pass mark, surely.
Yeah, go on. All right, what have you been watching? And I'm going to listen attentively.
I should jump in at this point. I am very tired today. But Kay, you are the one who, when we got into this podcast room, did say that you were flagging this afternoon.
God,
so
yeah.
This could be quite a low energy episode of the podcast. And we're all a bit sleepy,
a bit tired. Deeply fatigued. Although even in my deeply fatigued stage, I would say I do still listen.
I'm not sure, kind of 15, 20 minutes into a podcast, if you should start going on about how sleepy we were.
Really? I don't know. Bit of a sleepy podcast. But it might have a kind of chilled ASMR vibe for people listening to it. It might be nice.
Do you think? I don't know.
You don't think?
I mean, it might send people to sleep.
Would be the football chat at the beginning. So, look, stick around, guys. Stick around because we've got Scribbly Gum Island coming up later on and you won't want to miss that. What have I been watching this week? So I am now at the end of season two of Stranger Things. I think I've got one episode left to go of season two, my rewatch of Stranger Things. Very excited about that. Also, and this is something you should both pay attention to and salute, dare I say, I sat down at the weekend and watched Just Act Normal.
Yes.
And do you know why?
Because we said it was possibly
because
one of our...
you told me to. Because I listened to the podcast that I wasn't on, and you all said, James won't have seen this. He absolutely should do, because it's one of her very favourite shows of the year, and he needs to watch it. And so I listened to you. So, okay, on the podcast, I may not be listening, but in my heart, I'm always listening.
Is that first?
So I think the lesson I'm taking from this is he needs to not be on the podcast and listen to it just as a punter.
I listen to the podcast, just not when we record it. And no, I took it on board. I said, you know what, I am going to watch it. And so I did.
Wow. Oh my God. Okay.
And it's really good. And I want to get a chicken. It's great because it's I've obviously not seen the play, but I think what they do there with taking a subject matter, which is so bleak and upsetting, and making it so kind of daft and heartwarming and fun, but also sad and tragic and all of these things. But it's genuinely very funny as well. And then you feel guilty for laughing a little bit because you're like, should I be laughing at this? Because it's actually really sad, but it's actually really funny.
James, right? Honestly, you can tune out for the rest of the podcast now because you made me so happy. Not only that you watched it, but also that you received it in the way that Boyd and I did. And we just absolutely loved it.
It's really lovely. Dr. Feelgood, genius. Genuinely, because
so
that character
sweet.
Could have been such an archetype. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a lot more layers to that character. I think the first genius about that is when he gives the little girl the breakaway, the little chocolate bar, after having caused carnage. And then you're like, oh, this is interesting.
I really like their dynamic. Yeah. It's very sweet.
And the really needy teacher who kind of seems to be entirely validated by the little girl's compliments.
Who's like Miss Honey from James the Giant. From Matilda.
Yeah. It's a very, very good. And obviously the revelation, shall we say, at the end of the first episode was unexpected. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I enjoy Just That Normal.
Oh, he's in our good books, boy.
I'm in shock.
Yeah.
You've been so...
I am redeemed!
God, that really has woken me up.
Yeah, what a joy.
But also, and this is why I deserve all the props in the world, I watched that despite having 6 episodes of Foundation to watch, and I still haven't watched them.
Oh my
so I watched
God,
Just That Normal ahead of Foundation.
What is going on?
Right.
That really is a testament
We're
all living in a bizarro world now.
Thank you.
What's going on with him?
It's the apocalypse, boy. Tottenham are winning cups. Yeah, yeah. I'm watching Just That Normal and not Foundation. The world is on fire.
Everything's gone topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
It's cuckoo bong.
It's
the end of days.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. I have had, to be fair, I've had a lot of people saying how much, what an effect our review of that show had on them. And
really?
They're inspired to watch it, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, like I'm so happy about that because it's such a great show. In fact, spoiler alert, midterm report when we do our... shows of the year, half. What do we call it?
Half term.
It's sort of like a half year review. Let's call it a half year review.
Okay, it'll be featured.
Which we will be doing in June.
List.
Yeah,
I mean, it's obvious now that it's going to be top of James's list. That's a given. We'll just move on and
absolutely
decide what's second and third.
Yeah. Right, well, so that's what I've been watching this week. What else is happening? So it is. I'm just trying to think in terms of events. So this Thursday's Pilot Plus, we will have our spoiler special discussion of the finale of The Last of Us. Mm. And then a few days after, at some point, quite soon after, we will have the big standalone Last of Us spoiler special on the Pilot Plus feed, which will involve my interview with Craig Mazin going through it all.
And not me.
And not Boyd.
James has invited 10 to 12grown men.
That's right.
To discuss.
Yeah.
It makes me feel
Last
sad.
Of Us.
It actually now. It
we
makes
are,
me feel
however,
sad.
Boyd, we are recording it in a corridor, so you wouldn't want to be there. For those of you who do not subscribe to Pilot Plus, Boyd's main issue with The Last of Us is a show with too many corridors in it, and that is his big takeaway.
And you then told me that there's on the thing. What's it called?
The subreddit.
Yes.
There is a thread just called Corridors.
There's a thread called Corridors, which actually makes me really amuses me, even though I'm sure they're slagging me off in that very thread.
Because that also makes me sad.
No, it's fine. You can't take these things personally, Kate. One cannot take these things personally.
Fine.
And I consider it as a tribute that my observation about corridors has made it this far and has gone viral Reddit.
We're going to get an official response from the showrunners about the corridors. I'm going to make sure this happens.
Oh, my God, can you?
Yeah.
That'd be corridor game.
If you could put aside at least, I don't know, half an hour of your...
to discuss the corridors.
Yeah, spoiler special, discuss the corridors issue.
We'll
that
do that.
Would be great.
You should have done the interview in a corridor.
We should have.
If you thought,
we should have
thought it through properly.
Yeah. There was a corridor outside the room, if that helps.
Yeah, kind of.
Anyway, so we will be doing that as well. And I guess that's what we've been watching and recording and doing. Mm. So, shall we have a listener question?
Go Okay. Yes, let's. This message is from Oliver, who first of all gives you a shout out, James, and says, I've just finished Andor and I wanted to thank you for bringing up the assault scene in the first batch, as it meant I could watch it without being triggered. And he really appreciates the care that we put in our reviews. So that's nice. And brackets, like James, I have a very low cringe threshold, so I'm glad you always put out which shows you find difficult, as I find them the same. But anyway, his point is about Doctor Who, and he says... an unrelated point. I was curious on your thoughts about the fact that the current run of Who has had so many leaks. What are your thoughts on why this is so prevalent? I would have thought with the BBC, Bad Wolf and Disney behind it, security would be watertight, unless the fan theory that RTD put them out to mislead about the finale proves true, of course. So you wanted to get our thoughts on that. I mean, specifically probably Boyd and James.
Is the notorious RTD seeding false information on the internet?
He also says, can't wait for your thoughts on the Interstellar Song Contest, especially the reveals Boyd didn't see before.
Oh, yeah, good point. Well, that's right, because you hadn't seen the ending.
No, that was episode. So the reveal was the Rani bi-generation that I was referring to.
It was interesting because it was the bi-generation that they obviously didn't show the last time, yeah.
That was exciting. If you're old enough like me to remember when the Rani first arrived in 1985, I think, then it was exciting, yeah. And they did flashbacks, to show that this was an old character that was bringing back. Mm. Russell T. Davies talked about how he very specifically chose to bring the Rani back because the Rani isn't as famous as, say, the Daleks or the Cybermen or the Sea Devils or whatever. But that helped because it meant that relative newbies could enjoy this character without knowing anything about her, them, she, them. But people who are old enough like me to remember them when they first went out back in the day would get a thrill out of it as well. So that worked. In answer to the question, there's a whole industry now of Who spoilering. So, and
how are they finding out?
There's a whole world on whether it's on Reddit or on Twitter, X, and on whatever, across social media, of people who, first of all, they find locations where the show is filming. And if you think about it, apart from when they're filming in the studio in Cardiff, where, you know, that you can't see what's going on because, you know, you can't get
the doors and
beyond
walls
the gates
and corridors.
Exactly. But there is a lot of location filming in Doctor Who in general. And they do, you know. So as soon as they're out and about location, I guarantee you within minutes, it will have spread like wildfire where they are and fans will turn up and watch. And, you know, and they have to keep away paparazzi as well.
I think with the Disney dollar, they should do some fake scenes.
Yeah, I think that would be... Too exhausting for them to have to do that, shall we say.
Guys, I know you're busy, but can you just do a fake scene over somewhere else?
And then if you think about it, the number of people who have to see a script, you know, in a production like Doctor Who is a lot. You know, there are a lot of, you know, from the VFX people to obviously all the whole cast. And by the way, there's a cast, loads and loads of people. And while, you know, there's loads of security measures they can take in terms of, you know, I'm sure not every, you know, minor cast member or supporting cast member gets the whole script of the episode, etc. It's still, there's a lot of information out there that can be leaked. It's impossible to plug those leaks, is what I'm saying. And Russell T. Davies gets frustrated about it and gets annoyed about it, and, you know, and that people, and he's like, and he's right. He's like, why, I don't get why people get pleasure out of it. Mm. But certain people do, almost like the equivalent of your mum going to the final page of the novel. Some people just like being able to knowing what the surprises are before the surprise airs.
There's an interesting psychology there, isn't it? Because you're absolutely right. And some people, not naming anyone, Chris Hewitt, actively, genuinely seek out the spoilers before they watch a thing.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
For Chris, I don't think it's he wants the spoilers. I think that he just likes to know everything, and he finds knowing the spoilers does not in any way reduce his enjoyment. And that's fine. It's not the same for me, but that's clearly the case for him. I've known people who like to know what's coming because it takes away the anxiety of watching something. So if they're watching something that's like a thriller or a horror, if they know exactly what the plot developments are, it diffuses the anxiety they feel in watching it. But again, from my point of view, I don't want to watch it then because that has essentially ruined everything. Because if I know what's happening, I'm not interested. Like, I need to not know. So
you go from one extreme to the other.
Chris, I'm super
spoiler-phobic. On the extreme ends of this plane.
Like, any hint of a spoiler, and I'm just devastated by it. Like, I cannot stand it. Whereas Chris couldn't care less. And some people really, really like them. So, you know, like, it takes all sorts. But so I think there's an element of, like, people... But also, for something like Doctor Who, it's a thing that they love. There's a sense of just sort of wanting a little fix, a little hit, to know that something's coming, to be in on a secret, to feel that you're on the inside. You can then spread that to other people. Like, I imagine there's an insider knowledge aspect.
Yeah, funny enough, I'm going to mention football here, because there is a thing in football... the world of supporters called In the Know, ITKs they're called, and they're people who find out news about football, signings particularly, because now that the football season is coming to an end, the only news you find out or think that's happening with everyone's club is who you're going to sign, which new players you're going to get.
Does the football season end because Tottenham have now beaten everyone?
Is the season over?
The universe should have ended when that happened.
Oh, you
know,
is it over?
No, there's like the Champions League final to come, you know, but it's basically over. But it never ends, because then there's national competitions in the summer.
Oh my God, it never ends.
There's the World Club competition, which is new in the summer with Man City and Chelsea. Bizarre. Anyway, don't get me started. What I'm saying is there's an industry of people who love to reveal the news first, and they do get a thrill out of that. So I think that's also a lot of what happens with the spoiler society, the spoiler world we're in. People like to, because it looks like you're the cleverest person. And listen, if you know a fact, a reveal that's going to come up, and you reveal it first, kudos to you. So I think it's almost like currency, isn't it? You know, knowledge and facts that other people don't know. It's all. I don't understand it. I can see the attraction of it, but it definitely doesn't appeal to me. And I'd much rather. I'm with you. I mean, I'm not.
Says the man who spoils everything.
Well, apparently I do. I defend myself. I think that's unfair, grotesque.
Not about Doctor Who, just general other shows.
But also, I mean, don't get me. The whole we discuss spoilers a lot, but I do think there's a difference between like the what happens at the end of that Eurovision episode of Doctor Who, which was redacted from the screen that sent out to critics, quite rightly.
Actually, you know what? I spoke to Russell about it. He said all other critics saw it, but he just couldn't trust you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So you didn't succeed. Yeah. He knew you'd just spoil it on this podcast.
But, you know, for some people, even saying that is a spoiler. I'm like, no, it fucking isn't, you know, the actual thing that happened. I would never in a million years spoil.
I sensed another thread on the subreddit.
God, don't encourage them.
Corridor spoilers.
So, yes.
But can we take this opportunity, if we're talking spoilers? I would like to publicly call out all of the egregious journalists who regularly post on social media TV episode major plot spoilers, just nakedly out there for everyone to see the morning after a show airs. And
yeah, I've never done
it. It's unbelievable how sort of like utterly brazen it is now. The way they go, oh, this character's died, and that will be the image on their social post. They don't even attempt to obscure it and say, oh, can you believe this character died? They will just tell you who it is, they will show you a picture, and it's all just to get clicks through. But it's got to the point now where any major TV show, you essentially have to stay off social media until you've watched it. Mm. Like, that's just it. You cannot go on Twitter, Blue Sky, any of it, until you have seen the
part
episode.
Part of the problem, though, isn't it, is that is the American... UK divide is that they'll get stuff slightly earlier.
Well, especially right? HBO stuff.
Especially HBO stuff. I mean, that is... Right, exactly. Again, there is a whole world... I'm not going to say the phrase whole industry, but there is. of big surprises on HBO shows, them doing coverage, post-coverage of what's just happened when a reveal or a surprise happens on any given show. And they will the next day, that'll be in conjunction with the publicity for, the official publicity for those shows often. And not just HBO, that goes generally for a lot of big American shows. Well, so there'll have been, you know, you'll get discussion of what you're talking about, a character's death or something, the next day. But that's completely deliberate now, and part of the whole way TV works, because they like to get as much publicity as they can for big events happening in their shows.
Just look at Disney. Like, they revealed a big reveal from the end of Thunderbolts on opening weekend.
They changed their
marketing to include it at the end of opening weekend.
So it's not just journalists, it's the whole publicity machine.
Yeah, it's just really annoying. For those of us who are spoiler phobic, it's quite aggravating.
Yes.
Because it makes like going outside your house is like a minefield, because you'll stumble across some massive spoiler for this show that you love. And it's just...
I get excited to know there is a surprise or a twist or whatever on a show.
Yeah, I know, and you've said this before.
Yeah, and that, but I don't like to know what the specific thing is.
I don't need to know there's a twist.
No, that's the difference between you and me, yeah.
I don't mind knowing there is a twist. Yeah. I just don't want to know what it is.
No, because you'll see it coming. If you know it's a twist, you will 100% guess what it is, and it'll ruin it.
No, I don't. I very rarely guess twists on anything, so...
Well, I think we've all learned something here today.
Yeah. Interesting.
What was the question again?
I don't know.
It was about Doctor Who spoilers.
Are the listeners still awake? That's my question.
Yes, that was possibly it. But there have always been and will always be, you know, like a trade in illicit spoilers about things, you know.
The illicit spoiler trade.
The illicit spoiler trade.
That's something out of Star Wars.
The black market for spoilers on episodes of Doctor Who. Yes, don't do it. Don't spoil things.
Don't do it.
It's upsetting. If you would like your questions, well, spoiled on this podcast, and do send them in, pilottv@empiremagazine.com is the email address. Yes, we are old school now. We only accept submissions via email.
Or letters. I wouldn't mind a letter.
Or letters. If you wish to break out your calligraphy and pen K something on vellum, wax sealed, you can do that too.
Do you know what I realised the other day is I was thinking that K it told me that there were a couple of questions she was going to use or something. And I was like, well, I couldn't find them. I wanted to check what the questions were so I could, you know, prepare in advance. And I couldn't find them. And then I suddenly realized, oh, no, because they don't come from Kay anymore. They come from the Pilot TV / Empire email account.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God. So, yeah, that was a late
it's just
realization.
How we roll now.
Yeah. There you go.
It is true.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Okay, should we have some news? There's Christ, been big news this week. There's been one bit of massive news.
Well, your
news.
Oh, I know one what it's bit be. Of
massive, massive news.
Can I just say now that your version of what is your big massive news is very different to my version of what is big massive
can
news.
Can I go for the biggest news?
Are you going to guess what his big news is?
Yeah, go
I'm
on.
Hoping it's going to be a bit of a jokey...
No, oh. No, it is massive news.
Oh. Okay, in that case, I don't know what it is. Go
okay.
on.
Boy, do you know what it is?
No.
Go on.
There was a video announced to show this. Did you watch Skeleton Crew? Of course you did, Kay. If you watch Star Wars Skeleton Crew, you will have seen Ryan Keira Armstrong, who was in that show, and she is going to be the new Slayer in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot. She was anointed by Sarah Michelle Gellar, who told her on this sort of Zoom call, and that went online. It was actually very touching. But yeah, that's big news, the new star of the Buffy show.
Oh, see,
yeah,
that,
it's not big news.
She's very good at Skeleton Crew.
I thought the news was going to be related to Love Rap, Boyd's favourite show.
It's
which
back!
Which has now been added to Netflix. So that's the Sally Lindsay Channel 5 drama. And is currently sitting at number 4 in the UK's top 10 TV shows. And I thought that was the biggest news.
Do you know how I knew this that this was happening?
How?
Right,
are you behind it?
No, it's because my mum told me. So this is what happened. My mum's got Netflix. My mum's pretty much... now devoted mostly to Netflix. She might watch the odd like BBC One, ITV Sunday night show. So she watches stuff on Netflix. But a lot of it is old stuff that she thinks is new because people don't, you know, differentiate. They don't know what's new and what's old on Netflix. And Netflix certainly doesn't, you know, explain particularly. But anyway, so we were chatting away and she was going, I've started this new show on Netflix and it's about this woman who goes away to like Spain or something and then falls for a guy in a hotel. And she's thinking, and I was like...
Every alarm bell went off. My mom,
if you think I'm bad at remembering names of things, I do get it from her. And she cannot remember the name of anyone at anything. You know, she'd be lucky if she could name the Prime Minister.
Are you very patient with her?
Well, I'm quite patient. Anyway, so she's describing this show and I'm trying to work out what it is. And she's thinking this is a new thing on Netflix. I'm thinking do we not review it? You know, I was thinking it's a Netflix show. And eventually she goes, she's in a lot of stuff on TV, this actress, and, you know, and apparently she used to be a Buddhist, this actress, and may still be a Buddhist because my mum is... It's Sally Lindsay. I was like, Sally Lindsay. And I know Sally Lindsay because I do know her quite well. It's having interviewed her down the years and blah, blah, blah.
And rewatched Love Rat 15 times.
And I was like, oh, it's Love Rat. And she goes, yes, it's Love Rat. So my mum is one of the viewers of Love Rat that she would never have watched it on Channel 5. I'm not sure she's ever even switched over to Channel 5 in her life. But now it's on Netflix. And then I looked
at... Your mum has made it number 4 in the chart.
It's number 4. I think it's actually rising. So Love Rat is now more popular than half of the lavish, hugely expensive, homegrown Netflix creations and productions. But Love Rat is beating half of them in the top 10 in the UK.
Oh, I love that.
How brilliant is that?
I love that. And I also love the fact that you and your mum can bond over Love Rat now.
Yeah,
you can chat about it endlessly.
Completely, yeah. Wow. What about Sally Lindsay?
Okay, there's big news that I'm surprised that you haven't jumped on.
I'm liking this, trying to guess what other people...
Yeah, this is a new game.
The news is rather being guessed. Yeah.
We should do this every week. It's going to be a piss-taking.
No, it's actually not. It's not, because you are, like, Shrinking's biggest fan.
Yeah.
And yet, you have not...
Well, Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox is coming to season 3 of Shrinking.
Yeah,
Michael J. Fox, who has not acted in a while, is coming back for Shrinking.
Well, he was in Curb. He was in Curb season, off the top of my head, 9, 10 maybe, when Larry went to New York, and he was fantastic.
And in obviously The Good Wife, The Good Fight, all of those. But we haven't seen him on screen for a little while, and he's going to be back in the next season of Shrinking.
So does this mean you're going to watch it?
It's on the sofa list.
Okay.
What's the other one we recently added to the sofa list?
Mr. Robot season 4.
Hey, Mr. Robot, that's right. Are you going to watch it before or after Mr. Robot?
Well, we have to watch Mr. Robot season 4 for Pilot Plus, because we have agreed to do that.
Yes. Remind me about that. Yeah. Shall I tell you what my biggest news of the week is?
Go on.
Please.
In all seriousness, you will not get it, but this is really, really exciting.
The Bear trailer.
We'll move on to that.
I haven't watched the Bear
trailer. Well, I have watched the Bear trailer, so we can discuss that. Well, let's discuss that now then.
Go on, you do it, because I haven't watched it either.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I'm the only one who's taken the time.
You are.
Busy schedule. It's really good. It makes it really, really exciting. Yeah, I was a bit like you. We famously were with Andor when you were like, to be convinced of the wisdom of this thing, you know, whatever, famously. But not that I was doubting that the Bear could come up with a equally good season 4 as the previous 3 seasons, but the trailer really gets me on board. Really good.
And this may or may not be the final season. They haven't 100% said.
Yeah.
I kind of think it should be.
Mm. There's the big jeopardy in it, which they established almost in the first bit of the trailer.
Carmi chops all his fingers off.
Oh my God, that's dark. That's dark, yeah. Jesus
Well, he's
Christ.
A chef. What other jeopardy would there
chops
be?
Chops all his fingers off. I mean, Jesus Christ. You're sick. No. There's a literal clock that he's given from, if they don't pick up the takings of the restaurant, it will close down. So like it's that they established.
Oh, there's always
that.
A bloody clock. It's so tense.
They established that it's really, the jeopardy is real, and that, you know, this ridiculous restaurant that he's set up is barely functioning and
barely functioning.
Exactly.
Okay, that's better than my.
But there's lots
theory.
Of little character moments in the trailer that look great. All your favourite characters back, and yeah, it looks really good. I thought it looked excellent, so I'm excited about that. But no, my exciting news is that one of my favourite novels of recent years, Bret Easton Ellis's The Shards, Bret Easton Ellis, author, of course, of American Psycho, is being adapted by Ryan Murphy, the one-man industry, for FX. And he is going to create it, and it's going to star Kaya Gerber, who was actually in that show I was talking about earlier.
Overcompensating,
thank you. She's going to be one of the stars of this show. And we've been waiting, fans of Bret Easton Ellis's podcast, which is one of my favourite podcasts, which you have to pay for, but it's worth it, because it's brilliant.
Listen, it's worth paying for podcasts, boys.
Exactly. If you're going to pay for Pilot Plus, why not pay for Bret Easton? I don't know why I'm shilling.
Anyway, stop shilling for Bret Easton Ellis. He doesn't need the money.
I understand how this works.
Anyway, he has been... what he did with The Shards was he serialised it, and he read it out before it came out. And this was kind of post-COVID, I think, or maybe even during COVID. And he literally would read out a chapter every week on the podcast, or more than a chapter.
After it was published?
No, before it was published.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a whole amazing thing. And it's his most autobiographical novel. It's set in the 80s when he was like coming of age, and he was a student at college or even high school. And there's loads of stuff about, there was a serial killer around at the time, and he kind of elided the difference between what was really going on and what's kind of fantasy or what is made up. And he made it feel like he wasn't reading chapters of a novel. He was kind of reading almost like a memoir and met his own memories of what went on back in the 80s when he was a teenager. And then it turned out to be this novel, The Shards, when it came out, which is extraordinary and brilliant. And he's been talking for ages and ages on the show, on his podcast, about various people who may or may not be involved in it. At one point, Luca Guadagnino, is that how you pronounce
Luca
it?
Guadagnino,
was involved,
yes.
Was going to direct it, and then he dropped out, blah, 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 blah. So the fact that it's clearly seemingly being made by Ryan Murphy and FX is very exciting news.
basically.
And it's like, so it's going to be like a horrific, like a mix of horror with the serial killer stuff and high school slash college in the 80s kind of stuff, which I can, which is literally my sweet spot. All of that, all of those
things.
When's
it coming out next year?
Oh, well, they haven't started filming yet or anything, so it'll be, I think it'll be at least a couple of years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's just exciting that it's happening, seemingly.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you very much.
A couple of other big TV trailers dropped this week. There was a trailer for the Apple TV Plus series Chief of War, which is the Jason Momoa one, which is about the unification and colonization of Hawaii, sort of 18th century type story. It's very much Jason Momoa screaming at people and the throwing of the spears and war and charging and stuff.
Very, very, wearing very few clothes.
Indeed. He's got big Dothraki energy, which sounds reductive, but also the comparisons I think are slightly inevitable. But it looks spectacular. Like, it's exciting. It's an area of politics and history I know absolutely nothing about. So quite excited to see that.
Mm. More exciting than to see?
In many ways, boys, it is a poor man's sea.
Yeah.
As are most things.
I was listening to a podcast the other day and I meant to make a mental note of what it was, but I can't remember. It might
was it Bret Easton Ellis by any chance?
It wasn't Bret Easton Ellis.
Was it Pilot
one.
Plus?
It wasn't Pilot Plus. It might have been the one, Richard Osman one.
The Rest is Entertainment.
It might have been.
They were talking about sea.
They couldn't remember the name of it. Oh, that was the brilliant, I was thinking, oh my God, if Joseph listens to this, he'd be so furious. So they're banging on about
you
it.
You were
and
listening
they could
to a show
remember.
Where they couldn't remember the name of the show, and then you can't remember the name of the show that
I know,
you listened to.
But we come up,
this is insane.
This is the most meta thing.
But eventually we do come up with a name between us.
Oh, yes.
Whereas they never did.
No.
They never did get to the point where they were.
Was it like that episode? Oh, yeah, it's a show. It's a show, and Joseph Mosey, and he can't see, and no one around
it
can see.
Like that.
And it's in a world where no one can see, and I think it's called The Show Where Everyone Was Blind.
Yes. That's exactly what happened.
Exciting news for Ryland Clark fans, of which I am one. Boyd, as you know, I love Ryland. He's
James
got a new
as well. Yeah.
I don't care. He's got a
he
new...
hosted a quiz I took part in.
Did he?
Yes.
I bet he was brilliant. Was he?
I mean, he read out questions successfully.
Okay, fine. I'm skipping over whatever you have to say. Anyway, he is presenting a new documentary series, and it's called How to Be in Love, a 12-part series for BBC Sounds, which will come with full visualisation on BBC iPlayer. Is this a new thing?
That is effectively a podcast. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, but it'll also be...
Yeah, I mean, they do... The Traitors has the podcast, doesn't it, each week, and they show it on TV as well, but it essentially is a podcast.
So we're doing podcast news now, is what you're saying?
Well, why not? We just talked about The Rest is Entertainment.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Bret Easton Ellis.
Ryland of podcast news.
But it's going to be... It will be shown on BBC iPlayer, so I think that is TV news as well.
Oh, do you know?
Yeah. Anyway, so that is happening. And I love his documentaries. If you recall, I talked about his Ryland Football, Homophobia and Me. Do you remember last year, Discovery Plus? That was very good. So I look forward to watching this. Also, okay, bit of mad news. Channel 4 reality series, The Inheritance, will feature actress and model Elizabeth Hurley, who will play...
Oh, yeah, I did see that. It looked very camp.
Who will play a dearly departed and fabulously glamorous benefactor known as the deceased. And basically, 13 strangers are summoned to a grand...
To Scribbly Gum Island?
Yeah, and also a stately home. And they will have to compete...
You're obsessed with Scribbly Gum.
I am obsessed with Scribbly Gum Island, but it is about inheritance, so it's topical.
Anyway, back to Elizabeth Hurley.
Sorry.
They'll be there to compete for part of the fortune left in the will of the deceased, aka Elizabeth Hurley, but winning the money won't be easy. Anyway, I just thought it's an interesting part for her.
There's also Channel 4 news that they've recommissioned the series Patience. Remember, I think we reviewed that with Ella Maisie Purvis as the main character. Purvis, who's worked in the police criminal records department. Do you remember? She had special insights into cases. Basically, it was a big hit, one of Channel 4's biggest drama hits. And the second series will feature Jessica Hines, no less. The great Jessica Hines as her new boss, Detective Frankie Monroe. And Mark Benson's also in it. Adrian Rawlins. It was an interesting series, yeah. Good news that it's been recommissioned.
There was also a trailer for It Welcome to Derry.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yes, I did.
But that's made me much more interested in that project. I imagine, Kay, that will horrify you on so many levels. It is a prequel series to the It movies, Stephen King's It movies. Scary clowns, creepy monsters, imperiled kids. Mm. Yeah.
You know I'm a scaredy cat.
Looking forward to it. That's going
to
be fun.
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to, though. Sorry to interrupt, Boyd.
I was just going
to
say, that looked good. Carry on.
Nicola Walker and Jermaine Clement have been announced as starring in Disney Plus British comedy series Alice and Steve. That's a working title. But apparently it will be about lifelong best friends, Alice, played by Walker, and Steve, played by Clement. And their world will implode when Steve starts dating Alice's daughter. And obviously that causes friction. So anything with Nicola Walker in is good news.
There's also a whole raft of BBC comedy announcements this week. Of which, I know you're a big fan of Diane Morgan. Well, I think hopefully we're all fans of Diane Morgan, even James, if he's listening.
That's when he was that was when he was up his ladder, remember?
Oh, yeah, painting. That's right, yeah.
Yes, painting the ceiling while watching Kunk on Earth.
She's getting a new sitcom called Android. See what they've done there. About a social humanoid robot designed to keep elderly people company, exploring the hilarious intersection of technology and human connection. It sounds a little bit like Murderbot, but hopefully not.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we didn't.
We love Diane Morgan.
Your favourite, Lenny Rush, as well, has got a supernatural family sitcom called Reluctant Vampire. Okay. Mm. Everyone's favourite. And your friend, who you sat next to at the BAFTAs, Rob Brydon, has got a new vehicle called Bills Included. He plays a middle-aged divorcee who staves off financial ruin by renting his spare room to students.
Oh, can't wait for that.
Fully in favour of that. Mackenzie Crook's got a new comedy out. Now, this is a cast. Sir Michael Palin. Sophie Willen of Alma's Not Normal, who's absolutely brilliant, and Mackenzie himself. And it's called Small Profits, and that's what it says about it. And they'll be returning Only Child, Fun Boys, The Young Offenders, and Golden Cobra will be back as well. There's loads of BBC comedy.
Great slate.
So, yeah. So hopefully we'll be reviewing all those, and James will love them all.
Yes, indeed. I'm going to call it on news now because our listeners have almost certainly lost the will to live. So let's move on to reviews. Should we begin with sirens?
What did you say like that?
I don't
sirens.
Weird.
Sure. Let's start with sirens.
I don't know why I said it like that. I'm so sorry. But yeah, let's begin with sirens. Sirens is on Netflix, and it stars Millie Alcock and Megan Fahey as two sisters, Simone and Devon, who couldn't be, frankly, more different. Megan is what Terry White would lovingly describe as a hot mess, fresh out of prison, and Simone has reinvented herself as a kind of personal living assistant to Julianne Moore's billionaire high society wellness guru. And this is based on the play LMNOP by Molly Smith Metzler, and our very own wellness guru, Boyd Hilton, is going to tell us more.
I love a bit of wellness.
You do.
You love it.
You do.
I've pretty much invented it, I like to think, in many ways. I feel like this is adding to the increasing genre of what I like to call rich people doing mad shit. And you could include Big Little Lies, The Perfect Couple, Nine Perfect Strangers, Series 1 and 2, The White Lotus.
Yes.
All of these things, there's this whole miasma, I'm just picking out that word for some reason, of ultra-wealthy people living in extraordinarily vast places or visiting extraordinarily vast places in some examples. And in this case, you've got Julianne Moore as this weird socialite, Michaela Kell, who's obsessed with like those
falcons
and these birds, and everything, birds of prey and whole thing. And she's got a whole community of people on this kind of island off America somewhere. And they all seem to worship her in a bit cultish, in a bit of a cultish way. And by the way, I think I would not have been surprised if this had been offered, first of all, to Nicole Kidman. It's such a Kidman role. And yet Julianne Moore is brilliant as well, so it's fine.
Kidman can't do the roles.
It may be the two of them vying for all of these roles in future, because they are quite similar and they're both absolutely brilliant. And I love them both. But I particularly love Julianne Moore, and she is absolutely fabulous as this freaky, weird, super rich woman. And then it turns out that her assistant is this kind of like absolutely shiny, vibrant young woman who is at the beck and call of Julianne Moore's character, and she will kind of do anything for her. She's also happens to be, and I think, isn't it the first or second scene? So this is not a spoiler, that she's embroiled in some kind of sexual relationship with this bloke who's friends with Julianne Moore's character.
Who, did you notice?
Go on.
Said the phrase, that is cuckoo bananas.
Yes!
I was like, what?
Yes. Almost Kay's own phraseology. Yeah. And he's right, it is cuckoo bananas. Absolutely. But then there's this whole story spins around the fact that Millie Alcock's character, Simone, the PA, her sister arrives, as you said, played by Megan Fahey from, of course, The White Lotus season two. And she is
Drop recently.
Yes. She is the, in quotes, heavy quotes, the hot mess. And we see her, she's dealing with her dad, who's going senile, who's got dementia, played by Bill Camp, the brilliant Bill Camp of Night of Fame, who does these roles. Like, he's fantastic in these, like, earthy, gritty, old bloke roles. He's fabulous. And so the hot mess character arrives on this island kind of because she wants her sister to get more involved with her dad and help out with her dad, but her sister's got this whole life and she hadn't told anyone she's got a sister because her sister is, you know, is a kind of, is a hot mess, basically. Bottom line, I absolutely lapped up every second of this confection. It is cuckoo bong. Mm. It's, shall we say, there's the last scene where, I won't go into it, but let's just say...
I genuinely wanted to ask you about this.
Yeah.
The end of that first episode is deranged.
Yes. Yeah.
It is.
Yes. Deranged.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But it's so deranged, I completely agree, that it absolutely made me want to carry
on watching it. It's a different show. It's a different show.
Yes, it is. And why not? Why the hell not make it a different show? I mean, I love all these things. I loved The Perfect Couple. I love Big Little Lies. And this is, I think this is absolutely takes its place in that pantheon of bonkers rich people doing cuckoo bong stuff with, as you say, things that happen in the end of that first episode, completely ridiculous, different show stuff. It's only 5 episodes, and I'm already on episode 3, and you know, it's juicy, camp, mad, ridiculous, brilliantly entertaining. I love it.
Yeah, everything Boy said. It is mad, but I'm here for it. I wasn't sure about the ending. I was like, what? It's going in a bit of a strange direction, but what I love about these characters is that they're just so unapologetic, you know. Like, so the Julianne Moore character, she is a hideous control freak, but she just leans into it. She's obviously having a lot of fun in that role. But do you know who my favourite character is? Devon. So Megan Fahey.
Of course.
I think she is brilliant. Just the fact that she is like, you know, she's got obviously a lot of issues, but she's always trying to do the right thing. And she thinks her sister's being brainwashed because why else would she remain? I mean, she's living a good life, but also it's sort of insane and culty. And she's having to do all these weird things for this woman, like spraying her underwear with lavender perfume.
Sexting.
Yeah, sexting
her joint, for her boss.
Yeah. The joint sexting is brilliant.
I mean, that's the ultimate outsourcing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've watched 2 episodes and I enjoyed it a lot. It's mad, but it's very entertaining.
Yeah, it looks incredible. It's got, like, you know...
Megan Fahey is fabulous. Yeah.
Isn't she?
This. Fabulous.
Can we talk about the first scene, right? So Julianne Moore is releasing a falcon or whatever the raptor is. And I don't know, you know, you'll know, James, because how they shot this... But was she actually holding that bird? Because they are so close. I thought, oh my God, can you imagine if that pecked Julianne Moore's eye out?
I imagine that. Wow. You go to some dark places. Yeah. What if it chopped off all her fingers? You're just imagining this bird mauling Julianne Moore.
Did you see how sharp its beak was?
Yeah, but like, it's probably very friendly.
They're very heavily trained. It's a good question.
It was so close.
Yeah. It looked very real. And it didn't look like a CGI creature. No. So I wonder, and I can see Julianne Moore being the kind of actress who would go, no, fuck it, I want to hold this bird, and it's fine.
I urge her to be careful, because that was very close. But it was a very atmospheric shot. I liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a bird. I will grant you that.
You can confirm.
I can confirm it was indeed a bird. I really liked the show. I thought it was really funny. I love the kind of, like, it's a kind of classic thing, isn't it? That she's Millie Alcock's character is sort of from a, shall we say, humble background, has erased her past and reinvented herself. And then her sister comes to bring her past crashing back into her life. Mm. But it's just really, it's really deftly done. And watching Megan Fahey kind of just like a bull in a china shop, goes storming through it all, is endlessly entertaining. A little bit cringe, but endlessly entertaining.
Oh, she is happy to socially set fire to everything.
She's so good. Yeah. She is so good. And Millie Alcock is really good as well. And I don't know if you saw the thing on, was it Jimmy Kimmel or Conan O'Brien? I can't remember, where she was talking about how on her first day on House of the Dragon, someone came out and said, it's okay, we'll get you an acting coach.
Yeah, outrageous.
Like, wow, what a thing to say to someone.
Yeah.
And this is literally, she incredible. Didn't say who it was, but someone came over and said, it's okay, we'll get you an acting.
Which is like a scene out of The Studio, but that kind of thing does actually happen. Yeah,
I know. And she, also because she was fantastic in House of the Dragon as well.
Of course
so
she
it's
was.
Like
yeah.
they
she
can fuck right
standout,
off.
Standout, brilliant.
Yeah, and she's really good in this.
Really
as well.
Good in this. Yeah. I also love the little details of all the staff, how all the staff behave for Julianne Moore, and that we'll have to go through and all the little rules and things. It's just a joy. I thought it was so good.
Yeah. Very good then. Sirens on the Netflix then, Boydie.
Thursday it came out. Thursday we couldn't review it last week.
Everything so this week is a little bit
delayed.
Yeah.
Listeners may have to get used to a little bit to this now because more and more shows.
Sally season, aren't we?
It's because it's just the case that more and more shows are getting embargoed until the day they come out, which means we have to delay reviewing them. I think it's fine because it means people have more of a chance to watch them.
Before. So we're having to cover a lot of stuff that was out last week because we can't talk about anything that's out this week.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So this did start on Thursday, the 22nd of May, which is actually when we're recording this today, on the Netflix 2025, of course.
Okay, next this week we have The Last Anniversary on BBC One. This adaptation of Leanne Moriarty's novel takes us to, yes, that's right, Scribbly Gum Island! And delves into the secrets of a family, which include a mystery baby, an island inheritance, a random holiday shag, and the horrors of dating in the modern world. But more than that, it looks at what happens when an unexpected will bequeathment turns a family on its head. All that, and Scribbly Gum Island to boot. Who shall talk about this? Kay, I guess it's you.
Although I kind of feel like you should lead on it. You're so obsessed with...
Just Scribbly Gum Island. Yes, it's true. I normally say for Australia, I normally say, because it's an Australian show, something about Castle Maine 4X, but I'm not going to do that now. Not going to do it.
No. And do a terrible impersonation.
I'm not going to do that either. Accent, yeah, no, please note, even though I have said Scribbly Gum Island at least 7 times, I have not once said it in an Australian accent. Not once.
Is there a Reddit thread about this? Why no. suddenly stopped?
No, I like to be unpredictable.
You're certainly that. yes. Okay. So this is by based on the book by Leanne Moriarty. Now she's doing very well for herself. Obviously, Nine Perfect Strangers week, and she is the queen of creating these like tightly woven, intricate family stories, or about close knit social groups, as we've seen. The best example being Big Little Lies, and this is following in a similar vein because, as James says, it's about a woman, Sophie, played by Teresa Palmer, who is left her house on an island near Sydney.
What's the island called?
I'm not saying it. Go on.
Scribbly Gum Island.
By the great aunt of her ex-boyfriend, called Connie, the aunt was called. And yeah, so she needs a sort of circuit break in her life. Her love life is not doing too well. She wants to have a family.
So we should say, not going to work. She goes on a date at the beginning of this episode, the first episode. A date. And the horrors of that was toe-curlingly excruciating.
Yeah.
Though this is my main criticism of the show comes from that one scene. Go on. I apologize for interrupting with this, but Teresa Palmer is on a date with a man who is, shall we say, punching slightly on this date.
Slightly.
And I feel a little bit like, and she seems genuinely, and he also, beyond that, he's awful on every single level. And she's really upset when this doesn't pan out. And I know it feeds more into the fact that she's clearly just done with dating and it's actually more about where she's... It's not really about him, it's about her.
And also her biological clock. She wants to have a family.
Absolutely, all of those things.
Et cetera.
But there was a real sense of tragedy to that whole scene. It was so horrific.
It was awful. It was like that other show that when you weren't here.
Yes, which I missed,
right?
Thankfully.
Also Australian.
Yeah. Which is still going on Saturday nights on ITV.
And it's called...
Oh my God, what's it called? No, don't ask me. You carry on, I'll find out what
it's
called.
Okay, fine. Anyway, so she...
Fake! It's called Fake!
I thought you were calling me Fake, I was like...
Fake. Yeah, it's literally still showing on the ITV One, say, like 9:20 p.m. It was good, yeah. But it had really terrible opening date scene, which is very similar
to
this one. Yes, carry on.
And so she needs this break from her life because, it's not going the way she wants. And so when she gets offered, you know, quite by chance, this house on an island, she says yes, even though she's like, why the hell have I been left it? And the thing about this, I mean, there's a few elements of this that I didn't enjoy, right? Basically, it's very cheesy in places, namely something to do with a watch, which I won't go into, that she has. She has this little tick that she often refers to. But also there's a scene coming up. James, I don't know how much you've watched, but if you watch it, I think you'll want to claw your eyes out because I did too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which episode? Episode 1?
No, I don't want to say which episode because it might be But I've watched the whole thing.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you in the pocket a big scribbly gum?
No, yeah. Not at all. No, this is the thing about this show. There are bits that I didn't enjoy, like the cheesiness, also incredibly contrived, i.e. this uninspired journalist is gifted a house on an island where there's a mystery that she needs to solve. And also, most unrealistic portrayal of journalism in her editor was like desperate for her to write a story and was like, practically begging her to write something because she wanted to pay her.
Oh, that's in the first episode, yeah.
I was like, when does this ever happen? So there's these key moments that I kind of like hit upon.
And in Fake, she's a journalist as well, remember?
Yeah, exactly. It's very similar.
It's weird, yeah.
So there was lots of it that I was like, not so sure. Yet, somehow I was completely drawn in. I didn't care particularly about the mystery. I wasn't even that absorbed with whether she was going to meet someone. I was just completely, I was really fascinated by the individual characters and the family dynamics. So there's Grace, who is a new mum, and she's married to Callum. And that's another vivid portrayal of postnatal anxiety. And Grace is the daughter of Enigma. So James alluded to the fact that there's this mystery on the island. And it's basically that this woman, Enigma, was abandoned as a baby by a couple, and she was brought up by Connie, the woman who left Sophie the house, and her sister. But yeah, I mean, there's all these characters that are really interesting, including also Margie and Ron. And Margie's a midlife woman reclaiming her life, the emancipation of Margie. I just enjoyed those characters more than actually the mystery or Sophie's love life. So I found it quite compelling. It's not heavyweight, it has its flaws. But like I said, I watched all six episodes.
I am amazed that you got that into it, I have to say. I did not get that into it at all.
Really?
I just thought after, you know what, it was partly because it came after Little Disasters. And funnily enough, there are similarities. There's particularly the postnatal anxiety bit, which happens in Little Disasters as well. But I thought that was Little Disasters. I'm going to stop banging on about it. But it's such a kind of fast-paced, relentlessly detailed, densely layered narrative with loads of interesting characters and a central mystery you really care about because it's such an awful thing that what's happened to this baby. I then watched this soon after and I was like, oh, this is a bit drab and a bit long-winded and a bit takes
it meanders.
It definitely meanders. And I wanted it to be more lively. And what's weird about it is this is in... So you talk about Leon Moriarty. I mean, it's extraordinary. Basically, every single Leon Moriarty word she's ever written is now being turned into a TV show because this is in the same slot, Saturday Night BBC One, that Apples Never Fall was in, which is another
of
her.
Which is similar.
But Apples Never Fall was much more interesting than this as well.
See,
that was... Apples Never Fall had a little bit of kind of campness to it in a way, in a weird way. A lot of, you know, stuff about the tennis club where they worked. It was a little bit... It wasn't a show to go a little bit over the top. This was almost too grounded and almost too real. It's like I believe in it, and there's a little critique in there of, you know, of true crime fans, you know, wanting to being shown around this place where all of these events happened on the island, on
morbid fascination,
exactly, on Yumi Bum Bum Island.
And, wow,
yeah, but it was just too slow for me, and I didn't think. I mean, you said this yourself. I totally agree. I don't think the mystery is that interesting enough.
No. Like, I honestly don't know what it was about it.
I think it's weird.
I know. I just couldn't stop. I was like,
But I didn't have that feeling I needed to carry on at all. No. But my favourite thing about it was Miranda Richardson. Miranda Richardson, who is an absolute living legend anyway, and she kind of floats around in this... Connie's sister Rose, and she kind of doesn't really say much. And then in the first episode, she's basically almost mute. In fact, she kind of basically. Then suddenly they gather, and she literally shouts out bullshit to the pastor or wherever he is. And I thought that was funny, so I liked her. But beyond that, I thought it was a bit lifeless. I have to say. In the Leanne Moriarty stage.
Did you?
I was quite
invested weirdly in the love story that, you know, because the date at
did
the beginning
which is
did you
have a soft spot for her?
Well, it wasn't even so much that. It was just that you like there's a bit where she's crying on the bed and she's clearly in a really bad way and kind of very lonely and kind of upset. And I actually thought that this sort of like the idea that when she's bequeathed the island, Connie says, "I think there's someone on the island who you'll fall in love with." And like and that obviously piques her interest and you're like, "Okay, well I kind of need to know what happens here." The baby mystery I was less invested in. But I the character stuff I think worked for me and the fact that the whole family is absolutely furious about it. And the fact that she, you know, looking at her dating history, she's terrible taste in men, but I thought it was quite fun. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, and that's not just because it's set on Scribbly Gum Island.
Will you continue watching
it all? Well, that's a good question. I'm tempted to, yes, But I can't promise.
Tempted.
What I've done is I've added it to the sofa list, so make of that what you will.
Okay, fine.
We all know what that means.
The answer is right there.
Yeah.
Okay, the last anniversary then, which airs on the BBC One, when?
It just started on Saturday, and it carries on for the next 6 weeks, and it's all on iPlayer as well. But yeah, there you go.
Finally this week, we have Death Valley, and this is a six-part murder mystery that sees Timothy Spall as retired actor John Chappell, who played a renowned detective on TV, but he's no longer a renowned detective because he's retired, but he's drawn into solving crimes alongside a Welsh detective played by Gwyneth Keyworth, and it does not take place on Scribbly Gum Island. It takes place in Wales. We'll try not to hold that against it. Boyd, how deep was this valley?
Quite deep, yeah, interesting. And this is definitely not like Happy Valley, which is the other valley-based title on BBC One in recent years. This is it's definitely comedy drama, I would say. It's in the same vein, roughly, as Ludwig, mm-hmm. which, of course, arrived last year and was a huge hit for BBC One with David Mitchell, as the kind of, he was pretending to be a detective after the disappearance of his brother. And in this, the aforementioned, the great Timothy Spall, the legendary Timothy Spall, is a actor who's played a detective and now becomes a detective because he wants to, because he's kind of interested in the mystery of the death of his neighbour, in this show. And as you say, teams up with the Welsh detective sergeant played by Gwyneth Keyworth. And it's also a little bit Jonathan Creek. It's got that vibe. It's got that basically comedy-ish, mystery-ish vibe that I actually quite enjoy generally in that kind of genre. Halfway through this, and I love Timothy Spall. Like I mean, obviously, the Sixth Commandment, which Fuji quite rightly won the BAFTA for Best Actor, the Sarah Phelps drama was a career peak. But he is pretty much, I will watch him in anything. And back in the day, he used to do a lot of comedies, actually. Obviously, the Sixth Commandment was one of the most intense roles he's ever done. But I was like kind of delighted to see that he was back doing the lightest of light. This is a very, very light show, even though it is dealing with murder. It is cozy crime. So I was excited to see it because I love him and I love the genre. Halfway through this first episode, I was like, is this working? I felt like it was a little bit underpowered. I thought the dialogue wasn't quite funny enough. I thought he was doing his best to inject it. He's this grumpy guy who's like so famous that everyone recognizes him pretty much, and everyone wants to kind of, you know, talk to him and say, you know, you look smaller than you do when you're on TV, blah, blah, blah. And all that stuff, again, I enjoyed, but I didn't feel it was quite sharp. It felt slightly less worked through or, you know, kind of well written as Ludwig, as being the most recent example of a similar kind of genre piece. Then towards the end of the first episode, I got into it more and I thought actually it kind of picked up for me. And as it got to the revelation of this is going to be a mystery of the week type show, which James obviously generally doesn't like, but that's what it is, that somehow they're going to justify an amateur sleuth being played by an actor who played a sleuth is going to be helping solve crimes every week, clearly. And by the end of the first episode, I kind of enjoyed it. So it kind of won me over in the end. And I did enjoy it. Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is down to Timothy Spall, who is fucking great and everything. And he's just so, he's such an charismatic, likable, fun. Likable is such a weak word. I remember Terry White picking me up on my use of likable, quite rightly. but he is incredibly likable. And I enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's not brilliant. It's not going to change the world. It's not going to be, it's probably not going to win awards like Ludwig nearly did. Ludwig was nominated for a BAFTA, but I did very much enjoy it. And I think it'll be a really big hit, I have to say. It's a Sunday night thing, and it's perfect Sunday night viewing, I think.
I agree. I think it's very Ludwigian in tone and structure, case by week. And also the cases, or in this first episode, the murder, isn't overly complex or grisly. It's palatable and it's gently puzzling.
Yeah.
But I'm not tuning in. What I've realised from watching it is that I won't be tuning in for the case.
No.
It's the dynamic of these two trying to solve it. And that's the winning formula for me. Like, I agree what you say about the some of the dialogue. In fact, I think it starts with a line which is, you know, when it tries to be overtly funny, it's not funny.
That's true.
It's coming from the natural interaction between them. That's when it's really good and in the character work. But the pointed funny lines aren't funny.
No, that's very true.
But I I really got into it because I think Timothy Spall is clearly having a really fun time. And that character of John Chappell and his fictional detective show, Caesar, is just really amusing. And he leans into that, to use that expression that you all hate. But also, do you know what it is? It's Gwyneth Keyworth. I want to flag her. So she plays Detective Sergeant Janie Mallowan, who is 32. She wants to apply for a DI position. And even though her mentor, Dave Coaches, aka Stephen Rodri, who's very good in this.
From the man, the legend, from Kevin Stacey,
Doesn't think she's quite ready for it. And she's blunt and she's clumsy and she's all over the place. But she has this really nice dynamic with John Chappell. I don't know. There's something very charming about her, I think. She reminds me of Eve Miles, not just because she's a Welsh actress, but she has this way of like delivering her lines that's just kind of quick fire, cheeky, disarming. I think she's a real draw. And this like companion, this double act is really enjoyable. So I will be watching more.
She also says Melanie Waters, who plays Gwen in Gavin Stacey, is also in it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes. It's a Gavin Stacey fest. Mm. James, what did you think?
It's a bit silly, isn't it?
I knew you wouldn't like it.
It's a bit silly. I like, in the first 10 seconds, I pretty much made up my mind because there's a bit where they intercut a death with a bit from the fictional TV show. And I was like, oh, the tone of this is just not my thing at all. And then the first meeting between D.S. Mallowan and John Chappell is so heightened and over the top and deliberately comedic. I was just like, no, I'm tapping out now, I'm finished. But it settles down, like the tone, like they calm down a little bit. That it's so over the top, that bit is. But it does rein it in after that.
That's what I mean. It's when it's trying to be funny, it's not funny. And then when it just relaxes.
Well, they do. It feels like they're so try hard in those first sort of 10, 15 minutes. And then it does kind of slip into a rhythm. And it's not quite as silly from that point onwards. So I was no longer like itching towards the remote control after that point. But I did not enjoy it as much as I enjoyed Ludwig, which is less silly, although I understand what you mean by the tonal similarities. But yeah, no, I preferred Ludwig to this. I will not be watching any more of Death Valley.
Sorry. I will, so I'll report back.
Yeah, I will. I think it's fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fabulous. What of the many, many other things, Boydie, that we have not covered this week because we weren't allowed to?
There's a few things coming up. Department Q starts on the Netflix on Thursday, 29th of May.
We'll be covering that in Pilot Plus.
We will be covering that in Pilot Plus. That stars Matthew Good, among others, and is... We might say more about that. The aforementioned Kay mentioned, and just like that, the third season arrives on Sky Comedy / Now on Friday, the 30th of May, 9 o'clock.
Would you have to watch it?
2025. I will
need
watch
to discuss.
It. Oh, yeah, I'll have a look. There is The Better Sister, another in the genre of rich women doing weird shit. And in fact, well, we'll get into it because I'm sure we'll cover it at some point. It's got a lot in common with Sirens. This is The Best Sister starts on Prime Video on Thursday. Jessica Biel stars in it.
Oh, I've watched this.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So that's coming up. Kim Dickens is also in it, playing a detective, almost exactly the same role that she played in Gone Girl. There you go. The Power of Parker, Series 2. I really enjoyed The Power of Parker. It's a comedy.
I was less of a fan.
Yeah. It's a sitcom.
As was I.
Conliff Hill, Rosie Cavaliero, Sean Gibson. Very good. I enjoyed it a lot. That's back on Friday, BBC One, 9:30 p.m., 2025. And Wild Cards is on Paramount Plus on Tuesday, the 27th. This is a police procedural about a con woman dealing with a cop and stuff. It looked not great from the trailers. I'm completely
It looks like
it.
A fairly standard procedural.
It looks like a fairly standard procedural, exactly. That's on Paramount Plus, 27th of May, if that whets your appetite. And Walking Dinosaurs is back.
Yeah. That's been a while.
Yeah. They've rebooted that. That started on Sunday yesterday on BBC One, and that'll be on the iPlayer as well. I think that's probably... I mean, that's enough, isn't it?
What is our pick of the week?
Sirens,
but I do enjoy Death Valley.
It's definitely Sirens.
What about you, Jay?
It's definitely not Death Valley. I'm telling you that.
No, I know.
I think it's Sirens. Yes, it's Sirens. I think that's fair. Okay, good. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yeah.
Fabulous. That's it for this week's podcast. We do hope that you enjoyed it. For those of you watching on the YouTube and wondering why you can't see our faces, we have ongoing technical problems in the studio where the cameras aren't working. I can only apologise for that. We'll try and get them up and running as soon as we can. I would obviously use this as a chance to drive people to YouTube to watch the podcast, but since you can't this week, I'm not going to do that. But do subscribe to Pilot Plus for the price of, let's be honest, very little. A packet of penguins, I don't know. You can get more of this joy in your ears every Thursday, as well as ad-free listening, early access to the podcast, and spoiler specials like the upcoming one we're doing for The Last of Us without Boyd. Too soon?
Yeah, too soon.
That's fine.
No, that's good. Please do also review the podcast if you haven't already. We would love you to head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, whatever platform you use, and do leave us a 5-star rating. That would be very much appreciated. And if you'd like to follow us on the social medias, we are at Kay Rivero, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer, and of course, at Pilot TV Pod. There you go. That's all of my PSAs done. Finished.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm feeling good. Okay, that's it. We're done. We will see you on Thursday if you subscribe. If we don't, we will see you on Monday. I could not tell you what we'll be covering next week, because if I look in the calendar, next week is entirely bare. Like old Mother Hubbard's cupboard, it is entirely bare. Not a single show is apparently airing next week. Is that right, Boydie?
Oh, pull your finger out, Boydie.
I love the way this is a long-winded way of blaming me.
Have a little standing castigation for me, why don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's charming, yeah. But
it's going to be a quiet week is what I'm saying.
Well, no, there's things like What It Feels Like for a Girl, I think we'll definitely do that, hopefully. We'll definitely hopefully do that. And other stuff as well. Saint Denis Medical. I don't know how to pronounce that. That's a comedy, American sitcom. That's on BBC. The Survivors on Netflix. There's stuff. Stick on Apple TV Plus, which is a golfing comedy.
Yes, it is, with Owen Wilson. I didn't know that was next week.
Yes, that's next week. So even though I haven't updated the calendar, I throw myself upon the mercy of the court and saying it's been a busy fucking week, all right?
It's been a busy fucking week, says Boydie. Okay, right. We will see you next week. Until then, I'm off to enjoy my bank holiday Monday on Scribbly Gum Island.
Oh, God.
Pilot out.